See, over the last few years, I've carried out surveys at a number of facilities that had direct shielded doors, and so I wanted to go over some of the things I found, good and bad. And here's a Nelco door. Most of the doors are arranged the same way. This is a sliding door. It doesn't slide on the floor, but there's a large beam that, let's see if I can get the pointer to work. Where'd it go? That the door hangs on and slides along. This is supported by two columns here and over here. Keep it in the wrong thing. Here's a section view of a typical door. The amount of lead in the door is usually around 6 inches for a high-energy machine, such as an 18. And the polyethylene in the center is typically 10, 11 inches, something like that. The dotted line here, where did it go? Points back toward the isocenter. And so the isocenter is off to the left. And the weak point in the door is along that line. You can see it just clips a little bit of the shielding as as you come along. And here it goes through minimum amount of shielding. So the major leakage point is, it's real sensitive. It's going to be a here. All the doors leak a little bit along the edges, left and right side. And the right side in the diagram, it's fairly easy to shield. You can put shielding around the column, but on the other side, you can't introduce shielding the same way because the column is way over here. The door has to slide along to the left to open up. And you could put up a wall. See if I can use a pointer. Try again. Could put up a wall along here, polyethylene and lead, and shield that side if you have this particular arrangement. If the console is on the left side, and usually these are fairly close to the door, then you want to consider the leakage on the weak side of the door, the left side. Here's a typical room layout. One of the problems is getting the HVAC system into the room, and this one has about an inch of lead and 2 inches of polyethylene to shield the opening. If I was doing this room, I would probably increase those, maybe double the thickness. So you need a lot of shielding if you have a large opening for the HVAC, and I'll come back to this in a moment. The directions, notice left and right, I'll refer to them that way, as if you're looking into the room, direction of the beam. Okay, kind of go through a little example calculation. Not too practical anymore since IMRT started up, but it'll give you the basis for going through a calculation of the amount of lead and polyethylene you might put in the door. So here we have a 618 machine, workload, the old traditional 50,000 centigrade per week. I'll work it up all for 18, but if you're running IMRT and not using the high energy beam, then this helps. It drops things down quite a bit. But if you use a few places I run into, they're still using 18 for IMRT, and will result in increasing the shielding in the door. Use factors, I assume, would just fourth up, down, left, right. And a typical distance from the isocenter over to the door. This is the minimum distance over to the door, and room surface area enters in. The smaller the room, the more problem you have with neutrons impinging on the door. And neutron production, I show it as 2 millirem neutron at 1 meter from the target per centigrade of X-ray. And that's a little high for an 18 machine. Probably about 1.2, 1.5 would be a little more suitable. Neutron source strength, 1.4 times 10 to the 10th neutrons per centigrade of X-ray. And this information is usually provided by the manufacturer. 6 MV, no neutron problem, because you're just a little below the threshold for lead photoneutron production. So we can use Kersey's method and just do an inverse square from 1 meter from the head of the machine, so 1 meter from the target. And put the distance in meters, and we can calculate the neutrons at the door position and then adjust it for the workload. And at this point, you kind of got to play back and forth with the lead and polyethylene. But typically what I do is try to use a large amount of polyethylene because it's certainly cheaper than the lead and less weight. Try to get the neutron dose down as much as possible and then add the lead for the final stage of getting rid of the captured gamma rays and scattered photons and so forth. One point to make, it doesn't have to all be 5% aerated polyethylene. And you might use 6 inches just straight polyethylene, save some money that way, and then follow that by 5 inches of borated. Okay, and now we'll take a look at the photons. Let's see, there are a couple of calculations to make here. The first one is to get the capture gamma ray dose level at the door. And the equation here is for a maze. Since we have no maze at 10 to the minus D over 2 slash TVLN, that just goes to 1. And the equation is quite simple. K is an empirically determined constant. And to evaluate the neutron fluence, multiply times the neutron fluence to get the capture gamma dose. So calculating the neutron fluence, just using the technique in NCRP 79, we have this equation. We know everything that needs to go into the equation. And we have the distance, we have the neutron source strength, surface area of the room, and calculating, we end up with a neutron fluence. Multiply that times the 6.9 times 10 to the minus 10th, and we obtain the centigrade neutron per centigrade X-ray at the isocenter. So this is, gives us an indication of what kind of neutron dose we have at the door, adjusted for the workload, and we ended up with 340 millirem per week. And then the second step for the photons is to just do a head leakage calculation. And we use a standard 0.1% head leakage, inverse square it to the door, and once again get a centigrade leakage per centigrade X-ray at the isocenter, enter in the workload. And notice that this turns out quite a bit larger than the capture gamma dose. You could almost ignore the capture gamma and just go with this as far as the shielding or calculation of the shielding. One little point, patient scatter usually can be ignored, but if you have a room where the geometry room is such that the scatter angle is fairly small, say down around 20 degrees to get to the door, I'd go ahead and include the patient scatter. But otherwise, if it's up around 45, 50 degrees for one of the angles, then you can probably ignore it because of the low energy of the scatter. Okay, we add up the leakage and the capture gamma dose to get the total dose per week. And then, let's see, in this door, I decided, okay, we'll try 6 inches of lead, see where that gets us. And to evaluate the TVL now for the lead and polyethylene and steel, that's shown here. And, there's a little mistake in units. Good time to find it. The numbers are all right, but the units are shown incorrectly. The units here are centimeters and centimeters. So no problem. Okay, and so the polyethylene helps a little bit, 0.74 TVLs. There's a little bit of steel front and back of the door face, and that brings it down slightly. And you know, most of the TVL now is coming from the lid. We can reduce the photon dose now by the number of TVLs we have, and this gets it down fairly low, 0.79 millirem per week. Sum that with the neutron dose, and we have 2.58 millirem per week. Here's some features that I usually incorporate into a sliding door design. As I said, the edges of the doors is where the leakage is going to occur. The face of the door ends up fairly cold. So you can introduce some lead and polyethylene strips on the left and right side of the door entrance. In addition, let's see, now we're coming in, the isocenter is over to the left, so it's easy enough to add additional shielding over on the right side of the door to block that. And here are some measurements for that particular door. Notice, once again, the around the door frame, the door edges of the doors is where you see most of the dose. And let's see, in this case, when you're shooting, get my directions right here. Let's go back and look at this. Okay, yeah, well, it's, you know, the isocenter is over to the left, so on the right side of the door, we should, let's say when we're shooting toward the right, then we should see maximum dose, photon dose there. When we shoot to the left, the head of the machine is close to the door and should go up there. So the maximum photon and neutron levels are typically, 180 degrees apart. Okay, the measurements for HVAC were taken down at the floor, gonad level below the HVAC penetration. And if you go up to the penetration itself and make measurements, you'll get a fairly larger dose, or get quite a bit more dose. And here, let's say I worked through everything, just looking at 1 hour, 7 days, and annual. The 7 days is just based on the 50,000 centigrade per week. Annual, assume 50 work weeks per year. And let's see, the 1 hour was based on 100 monarch units or 100 centigrade in any 1 hour. So, this looks okay for a controlled area. And then just a repeat on what's in the door. Some additional requirements. There's usually steel around the top, the top, bottom, and sides of the door. The door overlap, that's a little small. I think now I would probably go up to about 10 inches for the overlap on each side of the door. And then I try to specify the gap between the door and the concrete wall as half an inch, but I seldom see doors installed with that dimension. Usually it approaches 3/4 of an inch. So that's apparently pretty hard for the manufacturer or the installer to acquire. A problem that can occur occasionally, they like to put gyp board all over the place, and you don't want it between the door and the wall, the concrete wall, so you kind of have to watch that. A lid seal is not recommended because that creates a good neutron escape path. And this is just a repeat of what I've said. Okay. Another point to make here is when the door is being installed, you really need to check things out as much as possible. And for example, the door gap, I would go in the room, have the door closed, measure on both sides, go up a number of points vertically, and make sure that the gap isn't changing as you go up and down, make sure it's fairly small, maybe a little more than a half an inch. Check the distance between the bottom of the door and the floor, half an inch once again. Usually they can, that's no problem. They can install the doors with half an inch gap at the bottom. Once again, the point about drywall, make sure somebody hasn't stuffed some between the door and the wall. Concrete, when it's poured, you can get it plumb over vertical with an eighth of an inch. But I've seen problems where, you know, the concrete was kind of wavy and you get a lot of leakage. Check the polyethylene and lead strips to make sure they're the right dimension. Occasionally, I see the strips put back into the wall. They're recessed into the wall too much. And they can be shimmed out easy enough just by putting material behind them. So that needs to be corrected, because that will really increase leakage if they're recessed too much. Check the lead and polyethylene in the door. By the way, you know, the 5% poly looks a little coffee-colored, and the 0% is real shiny white, so you can tell the difference between the two. Check the manual door opener, make sure it's operating properly. Anti-collision device, motion detectors if used. Some of the doors, when you approach them, it has a motion detector that will open the door, and turn off the machine. 10 MeV accelerators and neutrons. I've got a couple of little examples here where I made measurements, and do get some neutron contamination from a 10 MeV machine. Typically, most people seem to want to ignore it, but primary barrier that contains lead may be a problem. A direct shielded lead door, especially, I would caution. You probably need some polyethylene in the door. And then a room with an extremely short maze. I think here's some measurements or two. This was a 10 MV machine, 11 inches of lead on a primary wall and followed by a little bit of concrete. Was measuring some neutron dose outside, 1.5 millirem per hour. Machine was operated at 500 centigrade per minute. Here's just a little calculation for a lead door. The neutrons, the 10 MV photoneutrons are, about 0.7 MeV. And then by the time they get through the head, they drop down to about 0.35. And the neutron leakage, 0.02 millirem neutron per centigrade of X-ray at a meter. So if you just inverse square the neutron level over, machine's running at 500 monitor units per minute, adjust it to an hour, we get about 16.1 millirem per hour neutron, coming into the lead. The lead's not going to stop the neutron. To get it down to 2 millirem per hour, just went through that calculation, and we end up with a little over two inches of lead, or 2 inches of polyethylene to bring it down to 2 millirem per hour. And here's a real short maze room. The machine, it was an old Clinac 18 running at 200 centigrade per minute. You can see the maze length, D2, as I depicted there, is only 4.5 feet. When I opened the door and made measurements, 6.4 millirem per hour. The neutrons are quite soft. When you close the door was about 2 inches solid core door with lead sandwiched in the center. I don't recall exactly, but it took it down by a factor of about two or three, something like that. Okay, escape mazes have been, not mazes, but escape ports have been mentioned a couple of times today. Here's one that I took a look at about a year or two ago. This is just a floor plan showing the way the maze was arranged. There's a wooden door over here. It's hollow core. You can see it over here on the left side of the diagram. That's interlocked to the machine, so if it's opened, the machine turns off. Here are some measurements, different beam directions. This was a full scatter in the beam, wide open collimator, 40 by 40, running at 400 monitored units per minute. You can see it does a good job. The dose levels here are quite low, a lot lower than I expected when I went in to survey the facility. By the way, a friend of mine, Dave Patterson, is the one that did the design for the maze, escape maze. Coming back to the door gap, you know, the old NCRP 51 had a 10-to-1 rule. You know, if you have a 1-inch gap, then you need 10 times overlap, 10 inches of overlap for the door. It doesn't work very well. Here's a door that has quite a bit of overlap, 1 foot, 4 inches. So we've got 16 inches of overlap. The gap that I measured was about 3/4 of an inch. So the 10-to-1 rule says, 7.5 inches would be sufficient. And but, you know, we've got well over twice that for this particular case. The beam direction is toward the top of the page. This is just a section view. And 18 MV accelerator, 600 moderate units per minute. There were no strips, poly and lead strips at the edge of the door. And I measured the dose rate, the photon dose rate, along that arc shown there. That was 1 foot from the door. And notice we get about 16.7 millirem per hour maximum. And that's coming off at about, let's see, the scatter angle is about 47 degrees, or the angle back to the isocenter. And as you come around, you know, over toward the door gap, it drops, and it drops on the other side also. So that's just an example of, you know, the 10-to-1 rule not working too well. Neutron level, you know, I couldn't do the same measurements for neutrons because of the large Barner ball, but I just, you know, basically stuffed it back into that corner and measuring about 5.6 millirem per hour neutron. So we've got a fairly decent dose level here, and you know, that can be shielded. What we did was add, I think it was 3/8 lead and an inch of poly, and that provided a half value layer for both the photons and neutrons. And so the radiation looks rather soft. Where's it coming from? I made a couple of other measurements. here with just the 40 by 40 field and a phantom, and you know, got the 16.7 millirem per hour. The you know, this would be head leakage, phantom scatter, room scatter, capture gammas, you know, the whole works. If you remove the phantom, notice what happens. It's kind of surprising. I didn't think this would occur, but it dropped down to 3.45 millirem per hour. So now we're seeing head leakage, room scatter, and capture gammas. We've taken away the phantom scatter. And then if you close the field all the way down, you know, this would just be head leakage, capture gammas, and drops a little more. So you can see where I played with the numbers at the bottom of the slide, but it looks like almost 80% of the dose is coming from phantom scatter in this case. Kind of surprising. Let's see, here I'll talk about a couple of doors, additional doors, where I've made measurements, and some with the recommended shielding, some without. And the you know, once again, left and right is on the outside of the room, and we're looking at a kind of a floor plan here. And let's see, R is the distance back to the isocenter. S is the width of the little, what would you call it, chase area there, between the false wall and the concrete wall. And the measuring points are shown, A1, A2, A3. A4 is over at the steel column on the left side, right side of the door. I forgot to put that label in. And the door gaps, the first door, they had sealed everything up. There was no way to get into to either the left or right side and make measurements. And so I couldn't get the door gap. You know, that's in a case where, you know, got there too late. The second door, let's see, that was a problem door. The gaps on the left and right are fairly large, and most of these doors, all three doors, have roughly the same overlap. So let's see, here's the measurements for the first door. You know, the A1's blank all the way across because I couldn't make the measurements. And well, I could make measurements on the right side, you know, after the shielding, but this door had everything. It had almost everything. It had the poly strips in the entrance, and then the high-density concrete block shield on the right side. And here are the values in nanosieverts per second. If you're kind of like me, more used to millirem per hour, if you divide those numbers by three, that's approximately the millirem per hour. Okay, here's the door that had problems. Part of this was, one, they didn't have the poly and lead strips. Two, I think the concrete was quite wavy. Also, the you know, it had a fairly large gap on both sides. And notice A1 right up against the edge of the door there. Let's see, that's total dose of roughly 50 millirem per hour. And if you notice, there, all the rest of the A1s are blank. I didn't want to hang around there too long, and so didn't make the measurements. But let's see, A2, when you're going to the left, we're up to, 43.28 millirem per hour. And then at A2, it drops down for the other beam directions. On the right side at A4, you know, notice the dose is quite low. And so, you know, that shield there is really helping the high-density block shield. And then here's the third door. This was kind of a strange door. The instead of having the columns to support the beam that the door slides on, beam was just simply attached to the concrete above the door opening. And so that way you can drive the door into a pocket, which makes a nice seal. And also on the left side, notice there's a little wing wall there that kind of cuts off some of the radiation coming directly from the machine. And the total dose values here are quite low in terms of nanosieverts per second. Okay, another problem, getting the HVAC, air conditioning and heating into the room. So there are a number of ways to do this. And let's see, the first one mentioned here is to simply route everything underneath the floor slab. You can go under from the outside and go through a secondary footing, and then back up into the room. And the few I've looked at didn't need shielding, but you know, you got to get them down fairly deep below the floor slab. And if they're right up against the floor slab, they may leak some. But I don't think the leakage is going to be very severe. Another approach is to have an independent HVA system, independent of the rest of the building, and then just bring the refrigerant lines and so forth through a secondary barrier up near the ceiling slab, and then you need intake and exhaust openings and. You can get away with 12 by 12 inches. I've seen rooms set up that way. And you probably are not going to need any shielding here. If you want to hook up to the main HVAC system inside of the building itself, you can use three or four small openings and angle them at 45 degrees. And let's see, I say each penetration is 18 long, 12 high. I would try to make that 12 smaller if possible. And I've looked at a room where it was 8 inches high. Okay, and then finally, the last approach is brute force. You have a large opening up near the ceiling slab, roughly 4 feet long and probably 22 inches high, something like that. It's going to take a lot of shielding. It's going to be real expensive. And the ones I see going in, 2 or 3 inches of lead, 2 to 4 inches of polyethylene. And in a lot of cases, these are right over, the penetration's right over the control area, which is bad. And here it just shows a room that I had to look at for they use several, 4 different penetrations to get the HVA system in and out. And climbing up right against the openings, reading a couple millirem per hour, and then floor level, I didn't see much. And here's some measurements where, you know, we had the HVA system independent of the building itself, and these were 12 by 12 openings, 18 MV machine, and running fairly hot, 680 centigrade per minute. And you can see the dose levels, neutron and photon, that's right up against the opening itself. And then the 6 MV, of course, it drops down. Okay, last thing to talk about is hinged doors or swinging doors. And I haven't seen many of these, but I know of one facility where they installed a hinged door, and after, I don't know, a few months, they took it out and put a sliding door in. So it's an awful lot of weight on hinges, but I guess if someone really knows how to install these things properly and design them, it may work out all right. But here's some measurements. The neutron measurement was just done at the center of the door, so you just have one column there. And then I measured right, left, and the center of the door for photons. Fairly low levels, so it looks like the shielding's good. There's a little leakage over on the right side because you know the to get the door to swing open, you've got to carve out some of the concrete there. But I would assume that could be shielded away pretty easily. So opening and closing time, that's another point to mention. The sliding doors are a lot quicker opening and closing. And this particular door, it took a half a minute for it to close, 20 seconds to open. So you know, it's taking up quite a bit of time. And for that particular hinged door, I made some measurements of the dose fall off with distance. And this is photon dose. I didn't even label it that way, did I? Yeah, I did. Photon dose rate. And get a nice straight line on a semi-log plot, and half-value distance is about 5 feet. So if you have a corridor, and you know, people have mentioned this problem a number of times today and yesterday, but if you have a corridor and then maybe an office on the other side, you know, you assign the corridor a fairly low occupancy, but then the office has an occupancy of one, then you need some data like this to get some idea of what kind of dose rate you have in the office. And that completes my talk. Be glad to try to answer any questions.
Could you comment on doorless installations? There were reports that there are accelerator rooms without door. Could you comment on what the special considerations?
Yeah, if I understand the question right.
Doorless installations.
Installation, yeah.
Yeah.
I've been involved in a design or two, but you ended up with three legs. You almost have to wrap around the room with a maze, but you can get the dose way down that way. Long enough maze, you'll be all right.
Okay, big real estate.
Yeah.
Okay.
More comment than a question on swinging doors. It's sometimes a good idea to have the installer put in a third hinge at the middle. That gives you some redundancy in case over time a hinge breaks. I've had that experience. And a three-hinge door has a safety measure built into it that a two-hinge door does not in the case that it really fails.
Right.
So that works out pretty well.
Yeah, the door I mentioned that was replaced with a slider, that just had the two. I don't know how well the three hinge works, but it sounds like it would.
We have it in our facility, and it works great. So if a hinge breaks, you've always got two left while you're doing the repairs.
How long has the door been installed?
Pardon?
How long has the door been installed?
Actually, we added the third hinge after the door had been in use for about 15 years. So that's when we decided to change it.
I have question regarding some facilities, they have two doors. And if the machine is 8 MV, both the doors should be interlocked or the outer door only can be interlocked? What is the, I mean, regulation?
Let's see, when we had, when I was at Emory University, we had a 618 machine, and we had a double door situation where the first door, as you left the treatment room, was just poly, and then the last door was a wood door with a little bit of lead in it. And let's see, we interlocked the machine so that if you're running high energy, everything had to be closed. If you're running low energy, we left the poly door open, and you know, dose levels were quite low.
Okay, thank you.